All right. Hello, everyone. This is Regina, and I am here with Bentinho. Bentinho, you want to say hey?
Hey.
So you guys able to hear him okay? All right. So, Bentinho, I'm really excited to talk to you again. It's been about 2 years, almost 2 years, since we've chatted. And the reason that I invited you back is because I've seen a change in your teachings. At least it looks that way. And it's exciting to me. So I wanted to have you back and talk a little bit about that. Just to let you know what I've listened to your 40-minute video about the Sedona experiment in advance, you know, the one you did before the experiment. I listened to Self-Realization Session 1 that was provided. And I also listened to Corey's interview after the Sedona experiment. So that's, you know, that's where I'm coming from when I start asking questions. But obviously you can go anywhere that you feel to go, because I know there's a lot there that I don't know about, because, of course, I wasn't at the Sedona experiment. And I don't at this point have Bentinho TV, so I haven't seen the other videos other than that session one that was provided. So,
cool.
So starting at the beginning, what caught my attention, well, two things have caught my attention, actually, in the last several months, because people sent them to me. One thing that was sent to me was I think you had you were ill for a while, and I don't know if that had anything to do with your change in I don't know, in motivation, and you can talk about whether it did or not. And then the next thing that I saw was somebody sent me a post about the Sedona experiment. That's how I found out about it. You had, I think, required that the participants read The Most Direct Means to Eternal Bliss by Michael Langford. And then I think you suggested the Nisargadatta Gita and the Seven Steps to Awakening. And the Seven Steps to Awakening, I have not read the Nisargadatta Gita, but the Seven Steps to Awakening I've been teaching from here for 5 years, so probably everybody here is familiar with
it. Oh, wow.
Yeah, and I've been reading The Most Direct Means to Eternal Bliss. I think the first time I read that was in January of 2008.
Okay.
So people here are pretty familiar with that material.
Nice.
What we don't know is how Bentinho came across that material and why he's using it. So why don't you fill us in?
So, let's see. To address your first question, I'm having a really bad echo, by the way.
Oh, you are? Shoot.
Is it possible to turn the audio down?
Yeah, let me try turning the audio down.
It's fine with your voice. I just hear my own. Okay, testing. Yeah, this is much better.
Okay, and you guys can still hear him okay? Yes, okay. Go ahead.
Okay. So, I'm just sitting in to see what is the best place to start, because this is a story that could take 1 minute or it could take 2 hours. So,
well, we have 90, so anywhere in between those two. 90
Thanks.
Minutes.
Yeah, let me just start by, like, provide some context. As I've come to understand my life, my incarnation, the theme, as I call it, you know, each incarnation has a theme that has a certain intention behind it. Mine has and is that of bridging worlds and providing as clear and comprehensive a spiritual methodology, teaching as is possible. So, regardless of where I may want to go myself in terms of states of consciousness, so that there will always be a tether of sorts that pulls me back to a certain role, to a certain functionality. And in my case, these explorations are very varied. There's many jackets that I feel that I've been asking myself to explore. And when I say asking myself, I mean it's like this electromagnetic pool that cannot be denied. It's like that true relevance. So it doesn't really matter what inside of that, what the entity wants or desires. What it truly desires, what I truly desire is to honor that relevance, even if it doesn't look like this, or even if it doesn't feel like that, or even if it's not the highest state that I can tune into. So with that in mind, as a little bit of an abbreviated context, I have been, maybe about 4 years ago, I think, I have been asking myself to start exploring and teaching and distilling teachings along the lines of empowerment, transforming, transmuting, limiting belief systems, law of attraction, anything within that range of self-empowerment, self-actualization, mainly because I see that that's a much more relevant entrance point for the majority of humanity. And I realize I'm not just here for the dialectical seekers. I am also there for them, but I'm also here to bridge these worlds and to create sort of a, which I'll explain a little bit more later, but create a spectrum or a full scale where every entity, regardless of their level of consciousness, regardless of their level of adeptness, can fall into that spectrum and be taken as far as they want to be taken. Because in this more non-dual circuit, it's kind of an elitist little group, and it's not generally that open to everyone. It's not generally, not that the people aren't friendly or anything, but just the nature of that subculture is just not very accessible to a lot of people. Now, when you start talking about uprooting your limiting beliefs and increasing the well-being of your life and the freedom of your circumstances and your just your everyday empowerment, that's just a language that a lot of people can understand because they look to, you know, they look to Michael Jordan or Elon Musk or whatever it is, people that in their world they look up to, and they understand there's something there that drives these people. There's some kind of an empowerment. So it's an easy entrance point to, you know, hundreds of millions of people that are ready for a change, but they're not ready for the language of, say, Advaita Vedanta or Michael Langford or a lot of my own stuff before then. So I said yes to that request to myself. And I went into these types of teachings and into these types of meditations, and I took on a role that fits that model, or at least part time in my life. I took on that role, meaning I have to try out what that's like as a human being. So I wore the jacket of a human being, and the way this happens is, before it happened, I realized I was going to accept a bubble to be placed around me, so to speak, where certain things that were more accessible to me beforehand I would deprive them temporarily for a certain period of time until the lessons and the distillation of the teachings that required that bubble. Otherwise, I wouldn't learn these lessons from that point of view as a human being that was more limited. So I accepted that level of limitation, and I wouldn't call it forgetfulness because there was always that remembrance, but still at every other level except that deepest level, you then become the product of like all your other vehicles, your bodies, your mental, emotional, to an extent even your spiritual body and your physical body. They become part and parcel of that bubble reality that matches where people are at in a way. So even though I had still direct contact with the deeper levels of myself, they were, in a sense, muted, and attention was placed on different topics for the sake of exploration and distillation. So once done, and I completed Trinity Academy, which contains sort of a somewhat accessible path to enlightenment as well as the path of empowerment, and then it includes a portion on infinity, or what I would call the absolute, which isn't as accessible. But it's presented in other contexts and content that is presented as very accessible, so then it also somehow becomes more accessible because people will watch it and be like, well, this is a little weird or this is a little far off, but it's part of this whole product that I do understand, so I guess it's normal, or I guess it's okay. So I wanted to address all these three levels, so to speak, the level of the individual, crystallizing themselves as a true expression of who they are at a higher level, understanding the true intention for the incarnation, and bringing that forth and removing the limiting blockages that are in the way of becoming a full, unique, empowered expression of who you are. And then the other level would be sort of the in-between, or, I mean, you could call this absolute. A lot of people call it absolute. I generally don't. But it's the level of presence, or you could say beyond that awareness.
Yes.
And just the, basically the ground of being. Let's summarize it as the ground of being, so that people have that sense of stability while they go about their individual lives, which, realistically speaking, most people are going to continue their individual lives. So, but to provide them with this ground of being that they can always access will give them greater and greater exposure to the God state in their own way, even if it's just a percentage of the God state being filtered through. Even that is worth the change. Even that is worth the shift in frequency. Mm-hmm. And so, and then the third would be that which I perceive as the that which is beyond all perception, the one infinite original before even creation, before even Satchidananda arose. And so I plucked that in there a little bit too. So at the end of about a two and a half year trajectory, I think I was, it's like this bubble exhausts itself. So it's hard to explain, right? This is all like kind of metaphysical and abstract, but the more sensitive and attuned you become, the more you'll have these types of quote unquote energetic dialogues with your higher consciousness or that something deeper within. And so it's like this bubble was placed around me. I agreed to this. I remember specifically agreeing to this trajectory. I understood the value of it. I realized that I don't need anything ultimately because I know what I am. And I know that what I am cannot be destroyed, cannot be diluted, cannot be distracted. It cannot die, it cannot be perverted. So I knew that I'm fine, like I'm okay, like what I am is okay. So then all that remains really is, where is there the greatest benefit? And the greatest benefit that I could perceive fitting the bill or fitting the jacket or fitting the position of was that. So that bubble was created, and for 2 years I distilled those types of teachings, the empowerment teachings. As a result, I became a product of that because you need to model it, you need to walk your talk, you need to be what you teach, otherwise it's not grounded in reality, and you can't know the nuances of these challenges that come up when you do that. And so for 2 years, I completely committed to that, becoming an embodiment of that. Then at the end of the 2 years, because it's kind of convoluted, obscured, it's like the nature of the bubble to be somewhat obscured, the end period of such a bubble agreement, I've done this before in different ways, but this one was quite long. It was like a 2 year program. So at the end of those 2 years, there's a certain exhaustion that kicks in. It's almost like you're growing really old. Like what I imagine it would feel like if you're like 85, 90 and you're like, I'm done with this, you know, like take me out of here. So these energetics that used to sustain me got exhausted. In that exhaustion phase, there was some imbalance that I started to accumulate because I was still in the bubble. Mm-hmm. I was still in that sort of role and somewhat identified with that role. And then, but it started to exhaust itself and no longer have a place in my true expression. And so as it started to thin out and I became aware of that, things circumstantially reflected that and really put a stop to that stream, so to speak. And so so we had a fallout or a disbanding of the company that we started at the time. At least the MBs, it was all shaken up and the friendships were a little shaken up. Then I traveled to Bali for a bit, kind of to retreat and write, but I got sick for a couple of weeks, dengue. And that definitely had, it was symbolic of the stopping of that particular stream in the transition time.
Yeah.
And right after those 2 weeks, I went to Thailand to spend time in a dark room, a darkness retreat for 8 days. So that whole stretch of about a month was, for me, was all about clearing out all the stuff that I had accumulated, energetically speaking. The imbalances and restoring balance to the imbalances that I had accumulated.
Can I ask you a question? I didn't know about the 8 days in darkness. Mm. So can you just briefly touch on that? Was that kind of like the 40 days and 40 nights in the desert? really quick?
All of that. I was scheduled to stay for 2 weeks, actually, but it exhausted itself. The job was done before them. But what my experience of it was that it was intensely cleansing and so purifying. For example, the first 4 days of my whole stay there, pretty much nonstop, I had these bright visions of, and you don't see anything else. So whatever you have envisioned is like what's your sort of holographic virtual reality in that moment. And it's very visceral. The visualizations become very visceral because of the different chemicals released in the brain in darkness and stuff, and it intensifies as the darkness stays. So was, if you imagine like a multiple mile wide meteorite cut in half, so it has one flat surface, but at the flat surface there's like tens of thousands of super elongated pyramid shape, like perfectly square shape, but like a pyramid, but super elongated, so super sharp. So tens of thousands of these sticking out of like one half of a meteor, and these meteorites would nonstop impale me for 4 days. So they would fly into my body at the speed of, well, it seemed like the speed of light. So, and it just felt like every time that was a purging, every time that was a cleansing, like every time I uttered even a single thought, like another one of these guys would fly at me at the speed of light, and like kill that thought instantly. So it was purification and prepping me for the next phase of my incarnative experience as well. But mostly it was a cleansing of the previous like 2.5 years of that bubble, and just cleansing that. And so I did. And then after about 4 days, it just became quiet. Like there was like nothing there. All the vision stopped. And it was just like totally clean. Like suddenly everything stops and it was just... And then I started getting visions of the next stage. Even though I wasn't seeking any, I just wanted to merge, disappear, and not have any role for a while. But every time I seem to desire that, it seems to not be the case, because whatever this energy is finds my expression imminently useful here.
Yeah, that's the same with me. If you ask my friends, they'll tell you I've been telling people I'm going to quit teaching for years. Yeah, it never stops.
same here. Yeah, nice. So we'll get a little bit into this topic because I think this is relevant to discuss, but I'll continue this context. So then I started to get visions of two things, very specific visions of the center in Sedona. I just suddenly felt like I was supposed to move to Sedona, and that I was, there was a large collective calling for something to happen there that would serve humanity, some kind of a school, some kind of a spiritual school. And it felt like it would be something the world had never quite seen, the world of spirituality had never quite seen before. It felt really potent. And so I said, yes, I'm open to that. There wasn't even that dialogue. It was clear. It was obvious. Like, okay, that's the next phase of this expression, at least in the level of form. And so the other part of that was that I realized that the extent to which it doesn't matter how good I am as a teacher, it doesn't matter how skilled I am, the weakest link will always be the way people apply it, or the degree to which people actually practice it. Like, that's the thing that I can't control in that sense. Like, I can control my speech, I can improve in all kinds of ways, but in the end, it's free will in that sense. In
and
the
you
end,
can't even perceive
people.
What they hear. You know, no matter what you can say, but you can't control what they
hear. Exactly. Yeah. So I realized the importance of environment, or the influence that environment has. So the question basically was, I saw that the weakest link in my teachings was people not applying it, or people not being in a sincere enough space to apply them, especially when it comes to, because I was shifting back into the more absolute levels of consciousness and teachings while I was in this space of Bali and Thailand's darkness retreat. So from that point of view, I saw that the only way that people are really going to realize this freedom to this extent that I experienced is if they actually apply it with the same vigor, with the same earnestness as I have. And so But I saw that's a missing link. Like, people just aren't disciplined in that way, or they're not. They don't have that dedication usually. But I saw the power of environment. Like, if you, and my friend Anurag uses this example quite a bit, but I like it because it's simple and it drives the point home. It's like you go and hang out at a bar with a bunch of friends, and everyone's loud, and there's TVs all around. You're going to be loud, and you're going to be rowdy, and you're going to have fun, and whatever. But then if you take that whole group next door into a church, without any instruction, everyone becomes quiet. In fact, it would feel bad to start shouting and being rowdy. So simply by changing the environment, no further instruction is needed. People naturally drop in. So, and this link back into that center idea, to provide a space where people for more than several weeks at a time could spend time and just be constantly inundated in an environment that always inspires this direction. So anyway, I got out of the darkness retreat. I looked up properties in Sedona and exactly the vision of the property that I got and exactly the location of it and stuff. There was a property right there. So I checked it out. And anyway, this gets more into the specifics. But
that's okay. I'm a little bit interested in the specifics. Interested enough to know if you've acquired, have you acquired the property yet?
I've not acquired the property. Actually, in the last 2 weeks, I felt a pull to it again. There's been a break for about 4 months.
Okay.
And now we're getting more active to actually see what's possible to get it going. But I've been using the Creative Life Center, so the Creative Life Center, for my weekly meetings. So, but what I felt is, like, before I want to try out this sort of new, not new, but optimized path, I want to try it out on a bunch of people that are ready for this. So I decided to do a 2-week experiment with 12 people in Sedona, where every day we would come together and meditate and have the discourse and talk and read and at a more intensified level. And so we did that, and the results were awesome. So the intention of it was to see if we could take someone with at least a relative basic level of clarity and insight and take them all the way into a realization of the absolute beyond even isness or the beingness of creation. And there were some really profound results. So that worked. And then I did a retreat in Sedona, and I made this more public. And then I started giving weekly meetings along these lines.
Yeah. And the weekly meetings, I assume, are the ones that are available on Bentinho TV?
Yeah, Bentinho Massara TV. It's the Self-Realization School.
Okay. And people can get access to those videos for a fee of $20 a month, right?
Yeah, it's $22.
$22. Glad I have you to slightly correct me, because I'm a little off on my details. Good.
they can binge watch the first 2 seasons, and next Wednesday we start the 3rd season. And then they have access to the live streams.
Okay. All right. So is that the end of your story?
Do you have any questions?
Of course I can go into questions. At first I was just going to let you put the story out there. So.
Oh, I see. Yeah, that's the context, I guess.
Okay. So just out of curiosity, how did you come in touch with Michael Langford's books?
So after I was in Sedona, a buddy of mine, Max, he stumbled upon these books a while ago, I think. He forwarded it to me because I was starting to teach along these lines again more exclusively. And so he sent me, I forgot how it happened, but he sent me a book over text or something. And then I first read an online version and then ordered a bunch of his books. And I just really liked I liked that this was already there, where it's basically, it's very similar to my enlightenment path in TransfinityAcademy.com, but it's more extreme. It's less pacified. It's less, in a sense, accessible, even though it is accessible. You know, like, he does a really great job at making the language accessible, but the intensity that he demands is what I, when I built my academy, I felt that I wanted to make it more accessible and make it feel more, I understand that people are not going to go all the way with this. Most people are not going to go all the way with this, and that was not the intention necessarily. The intention was to make this more accessible to mainstream so that they then have at least a profound basic understanding, direct access point. And from there, each entity is naturally connected, and whatever is relevant for them can manifest through that perforation of their consciousness to that deeper level of awareness. But I liked that this, because I was sort of planning on writing a book like that, like The Dark Means to Eternal Bliss, and then Max sent it to me. I was like, oh, well, there it is. So I might as well recommend that and continue whatever I'm doing.
Yeah. Yeah, I also understand that people aren't going to take 12 hours a day, at least not most people. So I think what's happening in Awakening Together now is people are asked to practice awareness, watching awareness for 20 to 40 minutes a day. And then, of course, there are those who will go longer. But, you know, at least if you taste it, then the desire to do it longer might happen, right?
Exactly, yeah.
In fact, I was listening to you, your session one. And you were asking people to just come and just listen to the teachings. You want to talk about that a little bit? Why someone might just come and listen to the teachings, even if they're not, for example, fully attracted to the practice?
Mm. Yeah, so that leads back into the environment thing. So basically, to have them expose themselves to an environment where this is naturally inspired, they don't have to do anything. They're not intrinsically motivated to do this. Just show up because it doesn't hurt, you know. It can only benefit people, ultimately. So, and a perforation happens naturally by being in that space together and having these teachings and even the transmission that takes place there, too. So, yeah, take a bath in this knowledge once a week, even, and it will perforate your consciousness.
Yeah.
And at some point, there's no way back. But I did also warn people, I also said, if you don't want to see this through all the way, you might as well not start, because once you're perforated, you're fucked. You know, you're gonna want more of this, and it's nothing else is gonna make a lot of sense.
Right.
But then, if you don't have the discipline of body mind yet to really incorporate this and really devote yourself to this, and if your life is not set up in that way, you're going to be going through a phase that can take years to get yourself in alignment with that.
I know I look like I'm ignoring you now, but I'm not.
No worries.
I'm going into my email to look at an email you sent today, because I remember there was something in there I wanted to ask you about. It was a newsletter you sent out today.
Mm.
So hold on one moment. It just occurred to me. Where are you, Bentinho? Here you are. Loading. You may have to wait a second. Oh, here it comes. All right. Yeah, it was a flip chart. You had a flip chart here, a picture of a flip chart, and it said person, and then it said shepherd, and then it said mirror. And, of course, just going down the flip chart once as an example, the person wants, the shepherd desires, and the mirror detects the relevance of, I think, I'm having trouble reading because it's small on my phone. You want to talk
about relevance or benefit? Yeah.
Yeah. So you want to talk a little bit about the person, the shepherd, the mirror?
Sure. Yeah. This is simply a description of what happens to a being when they become more realized. So it's how they show up to the outside world. So as a person, obviously it's all based on consumption, it's all based on need, it's all based in lack, it's all based in identification with the body. As people wake up more, they start to shift, their desires start to become more connected to the whole, to the collective, the reason why they're here. So it takes on a different connotation, a different texture. It's no longer just what you want and what you need. It's more inspiration-based, it's more desire-based. And so the shepherd in general, what I call shepherding consciousness, I used to not make a distinction between shepherding consciousness and the mirror. I used to call shepherding consciousness is what I now call the mirror, but people started abusing that a little bit, meaning, that, you know, like, oh yeah, I'm a shepherd. And I'm like, no, let's reserve that term for someone who's completely empty of self and is here to be of service. Completely, that's what shepherding consciousness
is. Okay, like Jesus when he says, I am the good shepherd. Like that level,
exactly.
Of that level of shepherd, yes.
Exactly, yeah. So, but, you know, the ego loves to take on whatever is the highest and claim it as its own. So I made that distinction. Probably people would do the same thing now with the mirror. But I wanted some room there for people that are aspiring to become more of service to others and are aspiring to become empty of self, and they're genuine in that, but they're not fully empty yet. And so shepherding consciousness is that idea of constantly balancing love with wisdom and wisdom with love in your interaction with others, and becoming more selfless and seeing more and more that there is no separate individual anywhere, and that the reason for this vehicle to be here is to be a service to the whole, to wake up the collective. And the mirror is one who sees only God, and there is no distinction. So no real individual running the show at all anymore. And there is kind of what Michael Langford's book describes as well. It's that state where there is the shepherd kind of recognizes the deeper levels of self, but the mirror is the self. There's no distinction.
Right.
And so instead of the person recognizing the self, it's the self recognizing the person as sort of a jacket that it puts on. It just slips into the clothes that needs to slip into every day to perform whatever function it needs to perform, but there is no identification with it. There's no mistaking it for self. So, yeah, the mirror simply is, and it's a pure mirror, and it gets really interesting.
Go ahead and talk about how it gets interesting.
Well, there's this, to not take up too much time, there's just a video released on my YouTube channel titled From Person to Shepherd to Mirror.
Okay.
And I think I don't know if they clips it right, but if they clips it right, it should include the example of a person at a party versus a shepherd at a party versus the mirror at a party. And as the mirror, things just get exceedingly more complicated while also being exceedingly more simple. But it's funny, you know, because, for example, the person at a party, they just want something. So, you know, they'll grab a beer. They'll be completely absorbed in their personality. They don't know anything else but who they are. They'll hang out wherever they want to hang out, talk about whatever they talk about incessantly. So it's easy being a person going to a party, unless you're really shy or introvert or whatever. But for most persons, it's easy. You hang out at a party. There's nothing to do. You just show up, you consume, and you leave, and you have a hangover, and you do it all over again. So the shepherd at the party, it gets a little bit more complicated, because there's still association with an individual. You're still exhaustible. You can still be exhausted. But your intentions have shifted from self to others,
yes.
Service to others, service to the whole. And you're more aware, instead of identifying with your body, identify more with the understanding of being a soul, for example, transcending this life. The life's just being sort of like fingers on a hand. You have a more cosmic sense of identity. Now, it's not God. It's not all that is. It's not the dissolution of the drop into the ocean. It is still the drop, maybe it's a little bit of a bigger drop, and it includes more. But it's much purer in its approach to others. And so your job at a party becomes a little bit more challenging, because now you're going to be of service. And so naturally, because your vehicles have become more empty of self, it be utilized more as a mirror. So you'll be feeling intuition to talk to this person or that person. And the degree to which that intuition is pure is the degree to which there is no control of that. It just happens spontaneously. In a completely spontaneous state where you're completely free of control, that's the mirroring state. So, yeah, a shepherd will, you know, make sure it will be a good host, for example, make sure that people have the experience that will generate a sense of awareness and love and connectedness between the people there, rather than just like separate little stories. It wants to generate sort of a sense of unison and people sort of transcending or being elated, even if just temporary, above their everyday stuff and having an experience of some kind. So there's more inspiration there. There's a spark there that wants to be communicated from the shepherd. So the shepherds love to host, again, unless they're extremely introvert. But maybe it's just my projection, because I love to host. I've always loved to like host parties and generate experiences. So it's more like that. But then if you imagine, imagine being a mirror where there really is no, and I'm not sure to what extent this applies to other people or whether this is just part of my theme. So I've just not met enough people that do this or experience this firsthand to this extent to have enough data to make these statements conclusively. But I can just speak from my experience that the way that this brain is capable and this mind is capable of operating is quite complex, and it can draw in lots of different information at the same time, kind of like zipping, downloading packages, and responding as if they're all unzipped before they're even thought of. Like, I don't need to think. There is like packages of information contained, and it's multi-layered, multi-level, And it usually attempts to include everyone as much as possible. And so having come to a very, very empty state of self, sorry, did you say something?
No, I'm just laughing at the way you express things. You know, I mean, I think it's beautiful, but you know, everybody says things differently, so I'm just having fun with you. Words, so please.
So a mirror at a party is really interesting because a mirror has no self, and there is no sense of wanting anything from anything. And so the only thing that then remains is mirroring. And so the example that I used, I think, in the talk was, imagine being like a mirror, so everything that comes in front of you is reflected. There is no actual you. But people want to identify you as a person. Like, the ego mind will project onto an empty mirror that it's an ego mind as well. And so it will, everything you do or say, it will take personally as if that's coming from you.
Right.
But as a mirror, your experience, like the shepherd's experience, is like it's mirroring, but there's still an individual standing behind the mirror looking for the glass, so to speak, like in the FBI investigation room, right? Interrogation room. The mirror is just the mirror. There's nobody even there to, like, have any identity about it. So it gets fun because people will project onto this mirror all kinds of things. But basically, you can't be a character anymore. Like, you're no longer a person that people can, like, relate to or talk to. They're just talking to themselves. You're just talking to themselves, and you're just empty witnessing principle, and your vehicles are being used in all kinds of ways. You may have thoughts or emotions or feelings. You may even express things you would never express in your natural state. But they are happening. This is a mirroring effect, and it's constant. But you mirror everyone differently based on who they are, where they come from, and all their sort of subconscious energetic patterns that hang around their field. They get reflected. And so I become different with every person that I'm with as how I express myself. But if you're at a party and your parents are there, your friends are there, and your devotees are in the other corner, and then there is the people that have never met you before, and then there's the neighbors. You just moved into this new place, and there's the neighbors, too. And all this party, it's like your system starts glitching because the body only has so much capacity to morph at any in a single second, right? So it's like you'll have a conversation suddenly spontaneously with three people there, three witnesses, and they're all different. So you take on a different shape, but it's a combination of sort of a combination of their frequencies and what is required. And it maintains sort of the highest, it tries to reflect the highest version of them. But it can't be too high because this one person would be like, what is going on?
Yeah.
Right? It can't be too low because otherwise it wouldn't be a benefit.
Yeah.
So you can only express yourself so much if there's more than one person. A mirror and one person is perfect. Like, the work that can be done is immaculate. It's so precise. It's insane. I wish I could put it on video. But if it's multiple people, or you're teaching in front of a room, or you're at a party, it changes. Because now, like, if that one of the three people, like, slightly aware is distracted, or someone else calls the name because they need to hang up their jacket or something, boom, instantly the energy shifts, and my body now takes on whatever is the summary of the two people that are paying attention. And now I can say slightly more, and then as soon as that person looks back, like, boom, I fall back into that other place. So at a nanosecond to nanosecond moment, there is different reflections happening all the time. So if there's any ego or self left, it will be shown in that state and eliminated, or there's a need for it to be eliminated because it can't survive. If you hold on to a character like this is who I am, or an image at all, you can't perform as a mirror. So the mirror needs to be completely empty of self. And it just gets hilarious, you know. Because then it gets so precise. So you're talking to these three people, but you're aware that your parents are listening too. And so you say something, but then you're calculating this, the supercomputer happening. It just happens automatically, like downloading packages. And it's like, okay, I can say this now because it benefits them. Yes, it will distract them a little bit. It will disturb them a little bit. So that in about 10 minutes from now, I can correct that, but actually giving a different spin on that same story, correcting the balance there, so the damage, there won't be any damage. It will only be beneficial for all. And this just continues to happen. So the mirror also becomes inexhaustible in many ways. There are limits. There are limits to it, but.
So what I'm hearing, though, is that your highest teaching would come through with the highest devotee, for lack of better words, somebody who's very sincere, very disciplined, very focused, having their own experiences.
Absolutely, yeah.
And then, of course, if you have a room full of participants who are still more interested in the self, what about your teaching and what happens?
What about my teaching?
Yeah.
What happens in terms of how they apply it?
No, how you be.
In a private setting?
Well, I was thinking in a group, but it could be private. But I was thinking, like, if you have an audience.
Yeah.
You know, like, I observed you once. There were some women. I want to say girls so much younger than me, but they were women. that asked you a question, and you did an answer. And I know the reason you didn't answer is, or at least I felt like I knew the reason. I could have been wrong. It felt like you couldn't be pulled down to that question mm-hmm. at that time. So
yeah.
Does that still occur, or would you now just naturally go down to that question?
I can answer pretty much any level of question as long as the intention behind it is connected and sincere.
Okay.
What I can't answer is when there's a disconnect within the questioner.
Okay.
And I literally, this has increased over time, but nowadays, I literally can't hear what they're saying.
Okay.
Like, literally, I can't hear what they're saying.
Yeah.
So, I often reflect, like, I'm sorry, I hear your voice perfectly fine, but, like, and nothing is straight of what you're saying, because I'm not listening physically. I'm called spaced out, vibrationally present. So, then I tell them, that usually means that that's not your actual question. It's not what you actually want to know. It's not your true desire. As long as the desire behind the question is true and sincere, it doesn't matter whether they ask about manifesting a red Lamborghini or about God dissolving back into the absolute one at
okay.
the end of creation. Like anything between, as long as there's sincerity there, there's no judgment of where they're at.
So what I'm hearing is there might be a vibrational confusion if their mouth is saying one thing, but their intention is somewhere else. If there's some kind of something in them that's not aligned, then
correct.
You don't get a clear signal.
Correct. Yes. And or I'm not supposed to enter that because it's not the true thing. In fact, I'm supposed to ask for greater clarification because the end seek is to know their true desire. So through the act of not having a clear question and being reflected that one has not a clear question, the true question gets answered, which is they simply want to be in alignment. They want to know themselves, and there's debris in the way. There's all these mixed frequencies, these thoughts in the way, mind.
Right. There's a Ramana Maharshi quote, which I can't quote exactly. I can give you the gist of it. But the idea is that not everything...
Persistence in front of a mirror?
Yeah, well, some of them. That not everything a sage says is actually the sage's teaching, because
yeah.
the sage is a mirror, and sometimes the sage is just reflecting the foolish thoughts of the questioner.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, that's... Michael Langford likes that quote.
Yes.
And I appreciate it. I appreciate that quote, too. Posted it on my Instagram the other day, so I can read it here for you. The sage's pure mind, which beholds as a mere witness the whole world, is like a mirror which reflects the foolishness of those who come before him. And these thoughts are then mistaken to be his. That's what I was talking about.
Yeah.
Like if you're at a party in this space, and like your parents will identify whatever you say as coming from you. They have no concept of this mirroring thing. But the same happens in these spiritual teachings. And it's probably good that people identify the teacher with what they say, because in most cases, I think that is healthy. There is just a stage or a phase where the facilitator can be so pure that they are a mirror. And in that case, to have the most effect spiritually, it would be best for that to be no skepticism and for people in the room to understand that they are just listening to a mirror and it's not belonging to that person.
Yeah, no skepticism. Tell me how skepticism messes it up.
Like the party example where there's different demographics and different taboos and different consciousnesses, one cannot be purely a channel of the highest. One has to reflect where these people are at. So skepticism is... I see exactly that. It's people identifying with where they're at and identifying the teacher in this case as a separate entity that has its own personality and that what they say is somehow their opinion. in the mirroring state, that is not the case. But it is, again, it's tricky to assume this all the time because there's so many people out there who are great facilitators and great coaches, but they don't necessarily have the emptiness of self.
Right.
And or even if they do to some extent, it's not complete enough for the message to be distortion-free. There's always lack beliefs or neediness coming through. There's a secret person standing behind the mirror, still sort of like, boom. So one has to be, as a teacher, one has to be extremely aware of that. This is also why I like Michael Langford's book, because they hammer on this. So, you know, the imposter mind, he calls it. So that's it's really good. But skepticism will definitely hold back. In the highest, most conducive teaching environment, the teacher is completely pure. It's a complete mirror. And the student is completely pure, devoted, open. There is no skepticism there. But again, that's not necessarily something I recommend. I wouldn't say to everyone listening right now, go and be 100% devoted to your teacher or whatever it is, or even to me, because there's just so much societal messiness floating around, and spirituality as we speak is in its kindergarten stages in terms of how it's presented and the people that are actually authentically able to hold that mirroring space.
Yeah, well, in fact, I just wrote a tip this morning where they haven't seen it yet because I'm about a week ahead of where they are. So they'll see this tip in a week, the people who are listening. But I wrote a tip this morning quoting Nisargadatta about, you know, whether you have an external guru or an internal guru, you need to be completely devoted to that guru and listen 100%. But then Nisargadatta went on to talk about that it's difficult to find an external guru that you can give that much trust to. So, you know, on the one hand, give 100% of your trust to the external guru. On the other hand, be careful who you pick as an external guru, right?
Yeah, it's confusing, right, for a seeker. So, but definitely to trust the inner guru. Well, I was going to say to trust the inner guru is always safe, but it's not, because people need the outer guru to get to the state of clarity where they can actually distinguish the inner guru from the inner nonsense.
Yes.
And there's just so much bias present in a regular human consciousness field that isn't awakened and that hasn't practiced for years. There's just so much debris there that it's almost impossible to hear the guru, the inner guru. So it is tricky. It's like a bouncing back and forth. You go to your teacher, you get clearer, and your inner guru shines forth with greater brightness. And then you go to your teacher, and he clarifies your blind spots. He distinguishes the guru from the nonsense within, and then you go back inside, and there's a clearer voice there. And so I guess that's just the way it is in most cases.
I once read a Robert Adams quote where someone was asking him the same kind of question: how do you know that you're getting a good guru, a good external guru, and one that you can trust? And he said, you know, to be as sincere as possible yourself. And if you're that sincerity, you will attract that sincerity, right? So,
nice.
And that's something that we all, again, we have some control over, you know, how sincere I am, how earnest I am. So, yeah, it's probably the best advice there.
And then you'll be, definitely.
Yeah.
And then again, also, you know, to what extent do we really have control over that? Meaning, if there is so much debris in our minds, we can be as earnest as we can be, but that doesn't necessarily mean we're clear, you know. But definitely that earnestness will cut through the unclarities the quickest.
Well, that takes me back to what I heard you say today in session one, which, you know, if somebody feels like they're not to that point yet, of being sincere, of being clear, they still have strong resistance, just keep listening to the teachings. Right? That's what I heard you say, and it will break through, so just do that.
So. Yep.
I have another question if you want to share. I'm trying to decide if I should do one other thing first, though. Michael Langford actually gave me a 6-minute audio that I could play during this interview if I wanted to.
Cool.
Do you want to listen to Michael for a second, and then I'll come back and have my next question? All right. Let me find Michael. He named this audio Michael Ben. Michael.
This is Michael Langford. I listened to an interview with Corey Katuna. It was about an hour and a half interview. And it occurred very soon after Corey had attended the Sedona experiment. One of the things from that interview that I noticed was that Corey's interest prior to that experiment was primarily its empowerment teachings. And Corey indicated Ben had Corey, about that. And but this is what's so significant and important, is that it's very obvious from that interview that Corey's perspective changed after the Sedona experiment. What's important in life was very obviously changed by the Sedona experiment for Corey. I mean, when you talk about empowerment teachings, this basically just represents the temporary, the normal human life, which is temporary. Like one may want to improve one's relationships or improve one's finances or improve the conditions of that temporary appearance of a human life. And that is the orientation that almost every human being on planet Earth has. From the time they're born, or at least from the time he is born, to the time the body dies. They're interested in the temporary, the trivial, etc. So it was very pleasing to listen to this interview with Corey, because it was so obvious that such a dramatic change had taken place in terms of what's important. So. The change would be a change to seeing that what's really important is the discovery of who we really are, which is the eternal and infinite instead of the finite and the temporary. To be able to have that change occur within such a short time, just a 12-day Sedona experiment, I really enjoyed that. I thought that was wonderful. Corey, that the direct means to eternal bliss helped to provide the foundation. However, I think it was what Ben said and did during the Sedona experiment that was the primary factor that helped her get that. She mentioned was something along the lines that Ben had said, that if you still think you're human at the end of this, then he has failed. My emphasis has been so much like that, it could have been me saying that. There is a book coming, and the book is titled The Sedona Experiment. It mostly will be from transcripts of the Sedona, from the Sedona experiment. It's been about a month since I checked with Corey to see when the book would be available, but at that time she thought she would be finished with it by September 1st, and maybe in October or November it would be available. So sometime in the next few months, the book, The Sedona Experiment, should be available. I plan on purchasing a copy. I would like to read it, since I have not heard or read what actually happened during the Sedona experiment. And because I was impressed by the change that obviously had occurred in Corey that I could tell from that interview. Anyway, for those of you listening, in the next few months, the book, The Sedona Experiment, should be available. And you can read about what happened there in that book. So, in closing, I would like to say I wish you a very good interview with Ben, Regina.
That's it. So there we go, a commercial from Michael Langford. So the reason I wanted to play that first, because I do know there's a book coming out, and I also plan to buy it, because I did listen to Corey's interview as well. And the change...
I'm not sure what interview you guys are referring to.
Oh, really? Well, I could probably send you a link to that. It was there were two people who regularly do podcasts. I don't remember their name, going to Yoshin 1 retreat, I believe. And they interviewed Corey in between the Sedona experiment and the session 1. And it's a pretty good interview. What she makes very clear in that interview is how drastically her perception of what's important changed. She says she had absolutely no interest in the absolute, just none at all. It was all the empowerment stuff. And by the time she came out of it, she had no interest in the empowerment. She had interest in the, and she said she didn't go back. And again, it was a 2-week retreat. How many days? 12 days? How many days was that?
It was, 13 or 14 days.
Yeah, 13 or 14 days. So there's a book coming out, and like Michael, I will buy the book and read it. I'm very curious. In fact, I'll tell you, Bentinho, I actually thought about going to that retreat. But when I looked at my calendar, there was a conflict. But that was the one I almost called you and said, can I come? Can I be one of the 12?
Oh, delicious.
But wasn't
yes,
able to.
Yes, for sure.
So
you would have been accepted.
Yeah, I definitely would have been there if I don't remember what the conflict was, but I had a conflict and couldn't go. But I'm still very, very interested in that retreat. And so my question is, knowing there's a book coming out, and we've all just now been invited to purchase the book, and hopefully we will, what can you tell us about that retreat? What happened there that might have changed somebody's point of view so drastically in 2 weeks? A young person, by the way. It's important to say Corey's not an old lady who is facing, maybe death in 10 years in her mind. This is somebody who's still a lifetime. Usually the ego is trying to expand and get at that age, right?
Yeah. I think it's a combination of the environment. And the environment, in this case, includes the structure of walking out into the desert twice a day, sitting down, in the heat, and meditating, and following instructions, and Q&A. It's just the intensity of the environment and the architecture of the event that established this. I think it's quite crucial that no matter how clear the teachings are, so even if we take Michael's book as an example, it's one thing for a person to read it and be like, oh, this is really cool. Like, it's intense, but it's cool, and I'm going to practice. There's a difference between that or Michael holding a space for, it's a challenge, Michael, holding a space for 2 weeks.
I'm sure,
I wish
the dollar he's listening.
I know he sees a lot of his students in 5 minutes. So, to have an environment set up where these teachings are delivered so consistently just does something to the mind. It changes your associations just by the intensity of the frequency. That combined with the clarity of instruction that is required, and the instruction isn't clear, and if the states that the teacher refers to are not penetrated by the teacher, then the instructions will not be clear.
Mm-hmm.
So, in my opinion, it's a combination of clarity in the instructions, keeping it really experiential, and setting up the architecture and environment of that event where the participant meets the instruction in such a way that it demands surrender. And that means it has to be a little bit tough sometimes. you know, there were people in the experiment on like approaching 80 years as well. And so they were also asked to hike into the desert through the bushes twice a day and sit down on this lab and sit down and meditate, you know, in the heat. So there's a certain something to it being kind of like a boot camp, which requires that the person gets over themselves. There's a certain, like, I can't go out right now and resist this because I'm here, I'm signed up, but I have more days to go. I have to drop, I have to stop. And it's kind of similar to what they do in Vipassana by having the retreat and architecture be so intense and so consistent that at some point, even if you don't know what you're doing, you will drop into a deeper space. So I think it's a combination of environment and the clarity of the teachings. So I hope that this book will bring this experiment to more people and that it will show an interesting journey also into optimizing the languaging of this type of material, which will be interesting for those that are teachers or those that are interested in the higher, not levels, but, you know, higher spheres, other spheres of consciousness and becoming more meshed in those.
Yeah, and I just realized that there's something that I might understand that maybe not everyone understands, and it might be worth talking about for a moment. I think a lot of people talk about the I am as if it's the absolute. Do you want to talk about what, you know, talk about the, maybe if you have a model, a verbal model that will help share the relationship of the person to the I am and then the I am to the absolute?
Yeah. In the beginning, before anything had begun, this is a bedtime story.
Yeah.
Before the beginning of anything, there was infinity. That's the one. Not oneness, the one. Not non-duality. But the one original infinity. Next, infinity became aware.
Okay.
This awareness, or you could say insight or intelligence, was now able to, into infinity, produce appearance, produce what we call creation, even though creation is never actually created. Manifestation is never actually manifest. It just appears like a dream. So awareness, tapping into the infinite, produces what you could perceive as a field, a non-dual field of infinite energy. This is what we also call love. The reason we call it love is because a field that is non-dual, that comes straight out of, that is based on the original infinity, it doesn't see any portions. It only knows itself as itself. So this field is the foundation, the energetic foundation for any and all appearance, for any and all manifestation. But this field is formless and non-dual and beyond recognition. There's nothing that can... It's not doing anything yet. It's not creating anything. It just is. It's like the foundation. It's like the building block itself. So now there's an infinite intelligence of awareness, being able, like agency, being able to mold and shape. It's working its intelligence, its magic, so to speak, onto this field of infinite energy, which you could call love. And this magic, the combination of intelligence working its magic, working its intelligence onto this substance of infinite formless energy of love, produces then patterns or vibration. And so let there be light. Yeah. Is the third distortion of the one infinite creator. The first distortion being awareness. The second distortion, free agency. The second distortion being love. Entry being light. So awareness, love, light is what I would interpret the Indians call Satchidananda. So awareness, love, light are like the three primary colors, even though they're not three colors. They're ultimately one. But they produce then everything. And everything that comes from that is a further distortion that really is an appearance. It doesn't have any substance. So we could say that the only substance for anything is awareness, love, light. Literally, everything that we experience from the most tangible, like a brick being thrown at your head and hurting and you bleeding, that is actually light. And that light is inseparable from love. And that love is what's generated from the intelligence of awareness, tapping into the true infinite. And so awareness in this way is the bridge. It is the ultimate absolute bridge. Awareness can either be reflecting the forms of the further distortions, the further manifestations of awareness, love, light, and so it can perceive it like a movie, can perceive action. It can perceive itself where it's resting in the awareness, and then the body of that, the radiance of that is felt as love, light, or existence, consciousness, bliss. And what can happen is that that can even exhaust itself or be perforated or penetrated, and awareness can look backwards, even beyond itself. First is the personal consciousness that's trying to look back into awareness.
Yes.
But when awareness is identified with awareness, awareness itself can inquire, since there still is some isness to awareness, love, light.
Yes, the I am.
It cannot be the I am, the great universal purified I am is the awareness, love, light. The personal I am plus the sense of location, plus the sense of visualization of here. Right? That's what we would call this, which is helpful for people to realize, is to go from the scattered mind to the stable I am here. Still very individually oriented. It's still very much I am here inside this room kind of an experience. But at least there's a stability there, and something starts to permeate. When this permeation becomes more complete, it starts to overwhelm or replace the perspective of form and space and time and location. And when it discards the location, no variable, of perception, then the individual starts to disappear. And what is realized is the formless isness, the formless I, which is the same as the individual I am, but without the attribute of location. Mm-hmm. It's free of location. Thus then reveals itself to be the only isness of anything, and that every projection, every form is but a projection of this isness. There is nothing but that isness. And then deepening that or reflecting upon what was before this isness, because clearly isness still is. And something that is, although formless, still has a quality. The quality of Satchitananda, the quality of awareness, love, light. It's still a quality. It might be formless, but it has a quality. A quality cannot be absolute, because a quality cannot produce a quality. Only something which is not that quality can have produced the quality of awareness, love, light. What is that? So now awareness can start to turn, I wouldn't call it within, but beyond or before, even itself. So now, not the mind, but awareness or the I am starts to inquire what's beyond itself. And this occurred to me the first time maybe 5 years ago.
I might remember happened. Exactly. It might have been June of 2012. Continue.
Oh, well,
because I know. This is what caught my ear. Because that was the year. The year I took an entire year off from work to spend all day, every day, in contemplation of the seven steps to awakening. And,
wow. Okay.
And I was having these realizations. And then I would go on Facebook, and you were typing the same things, and I fell in love. But I think that I was the only one at that time. If I remember, a lot of people really did not like what you were writing. But yeah.
Yes.
And also, yeah. I want to say thank you again, because you just answered the question I asked you to go with the retreat. So thanks.
What was that?
Yeah, I asked you. I wanted you to talk about what the absolute was. And you just answered the question. And also what I heard, and you can correct me in this to go differently, what I heard was if one is awakening, what I heard was a backup awakening process where possibly the first awakening is awakening from scattered to clear human. You know, what the what the Hindus might call sattvic, right?
Nice.
But still human all the way. And then awakening from human to presence or I am or awareness. You called it love, light, awareness, I think.
Awareness, love, light.
Awareness, love, light. And then awakening again from awareness, love, light to absolute. And from there, there would be no further no further awakenings.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, there would only be reemergence.
Yes.
At that point,
yes.
If anything.
And that would be adults.
I see it as. Sorry?
So that would be adults. You know, like if we use the symbol of adults, when you're an adult, you are a being with the knowledge of everything you acquired along the way. So this is like a different kind of an adult. You know, it's now has the knowledge of all of the levels combined.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Let's see, what time is it? I haven't looked at the clock. It's 20 till. If anybody has any questions for Bentinho, you guys know you're allowed to ask. I know I've just been chatting with him, but we do have time left. So if you have questions, please let me know. And Bentinho, if there's anything else that's occurring to you to say, just take it away.
Something does arise, but okay. The time might not be long enough to address this properly. Or to not just stay conceptual.
That's all right. I would go. I would die of curiosity if we didn't dive into it. So let's see what we can do with it.
Okay. So now the intention is starting to crystallize. You know, my personal preference is to speak to these higher levels when I show up. It's just the most natural, innate, comfortable. It feels the most authentic to my expression. However, I understand people are at where they're at, and so I have as much love for them as I have for those that are ready for the higher levels. So my desire now is to create a school that, and I've always been surprised that it's never been created before. I look upon the spirituality on earth, and I am baffled at how everyone, although we ask the same questions and we go through the same journeys, we all go to India, we all go read the same books by Osho, and we all go, you know, read The Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle. Everyone goes on this discombobulated search for that which is essentially clear and so pristinely available. If you tell your kids that they need to learn their ABCs and their algebra, you send them to school. It's there. Provided, you know, decades of optimization have occurred, they go and they learn and they ascend to the next class and next class. But here you tell your kid or yourself, you should become more spiritual. You should wake up. You should become enlightened. And there's no structure. Just go off, do whatever you need to do, go find something. And everyone starts with like incense, to yoga, to Reiki, to hypnosis, to regression. There's just no clarity, there's no structure on earth. We really are in the kindergarten stages of having spirituality be implemented, integrated in a helpful way in the structure of our society. So I want to create the beginnings of a school that addresses all the levels so that everyone, regardless of their level of interest, whether it is that they want to become more aware of why they're attracting their circumstances the way they do, and they want to start changing that and feeling more powerful and more confident, or whether it is that are completely done and they have this innate deep yearning, they want to know the God state, and maybe even beyond, they want to know what happens at the end of all of existence. And they have this draw, this yearning. Regardless of where they're at in that process, they should be welcomed because they are the same. They are the children of the One. They are my children. They are your children. So they deserve the best treatment at the level that they're at. And any bit of help will be helpful in their journey. So I want to create a school that's actually based on a cosmology that I believe to be universally applicable, meaning that this defines the structure of evolution within our creation. So yes, it applies to the grand illusion, but it is more real than most of the human concepts of different dimensions and stuff that people come up with because of their distortions. And the book that speaks most clearly to this is Channeled Works, a very specific channeled works called The Loved One. And but this the same concept of the 7/8 densities that make up the evolutionary cycle of this creation are present in other works. And the beauty of this mechanism is that I've always wanted to optimize and find what actually is universally applicable and distill everything down to its very essence. The beauty of this cosmology, that although at first conceptual when one hears it, it starts to make sense. It's like the backbone that one can plug in all the teachers and things of Earth. It's like a categorization that is not culture-based. It's transcultural. It's trans-Earth. It is cosmological. All the ETs within this grand illusion, they express these different densities. So to have a school on Earth that for the first time ever truly reflects in my experience or awareness, reflects or has as its backbone this cosmological structure. And so that the teachings at each of these levels are as clear as they can be, but they all fit into a larger structure, which then could quite naturally form a school with ascending classes and groups. So these 8 densities would be addressed in this school, and different facilitators would facilitate people on different levels, and there'd be training for facilitators and shepherds and mirrors. So that's what I want to create physically in Sedona, but it will have an online counterpart so that we can reach the whole world with this. And and I can definitely see stuff like, there's very few teachings and teachers I would recommend, but stuff like Michael Langford's books and or his presence or collaboration on those higher densities is how I see it, meaning that there would be a lot of my stuff there, obviously, because I have that overview and I'm creating this structure. But there would be recommendation and inclusion of other works and other teachings and other recommendations that at each of these levels that I believe are as clear and non-distracting from the overarching structure as possible. So that anyone at any level could fall in, do what they want, get out, or do what they want and be inspired to go higher, be inspired to go higher, be inspired to go higher. And some people would jump right in at the highest level. And maybe we would send them back to the 5th level just because they need something and then they come back or whatever. But this structure would then be there.
Yeah, well, I know I didn't jump right in at the highest level, so... right now, sometimes when we have extra time here, they're playing some of my audios. I've been teaching since 2005, I think, and so they're going back and playing some of those audios, and I'm listening to them, and I'm going, oh, my God. but it was what I needed at the time, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's so relevant for thousands, so, the teacher, I think, in my opinion, ultimately, the teacher may have their preference and may see the truth as it is, more clearly, but there's an aspect, at least of me, which is kind of a bodhisattvic principle, I guess, where it is regardless of what I want, like I'm not here for myself anyway.
Right.
So there needs to be an equal love and provision for each level. If we care about the being more than we care about the teaching, or if we care about the actual awakening more than we care about our own language, so there needs to be that open, that compassion.
Well, with the perspective of, the parent, if you have a 2-year-old, a 5-year-old, an 8-year-old, a 12-year-old, a 15-year-old, and a 17-year-old, you're not going to treat them all the same, but you're going to love them all the same, right?
Correct. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, I don't know if you'll know the answer to this question. Are you having fundraisers? Do you have a means of going about raising the money for the property that you feel called to?
All help is appreciated.
Yeah.
The announcement during the Wednesday self-realization school in Sedona to the live streamers and the people present there, and we told them to email at a certain email address if they were interested in contributing a decent amount, at least, not like $500, but more of an investment or a gift. So we got, I think we have 15 people so far, and we're sifting through it and communicating with them. There is a way to probably get this property that wouldn't require a full the full price up front. It would be like a lease to own is what we're going for, so that we have 3 to 5 years to lease the property with a minimal deposit, which would be very doable. If multiple people with a little bit of money above average chip in, it would be very doable to have that deposit be placed and start having the mortgage or the lease to own monthly payments. So it's very doable, but yes, all help appreciated financially.
Yes.
If anyone is hearing this, send an email to lisa@ventinomassaro.com.
All right. lisa@ventinomassaro.com. Super, super. Okay, so you sent out some announcements today. And of course, this is going to be recorded and on YouTube for, you know, ever. So we should probably keep this part short because this is current events. Briefly, do you want to talk about the three retreats you announced that are upcoming in the very near future? Or do you remember? You want me to announce them?
Sedona.
Yeah.
I have the Vortex, October 23rd through 27th. So that's an in-depth 5-day retreat. There is a 2-day event in Asheville, North Carolina, I think October 14th, 15th.
I can look. I can look for you. Let's see, because it's in the same email that has the flip chart. So,
sweet.
Let's see. All right. So, 2-day intensive in Asheville, North Carolina, October 14th and 15th.
And then New York City.
Yeah.
1-day event on October 4th.
November 4th.
November 4th.
Yeah, November 4th. 1-day in New York City. So, yeah. Super. All right. So why don't you tell us, this probably is a little, this will probably be true for a little longer. So why don't you tell us about Ventinho Massaro TV?
Ultimately, that's probably going to merge with the school platform,
okay,
the online. But for now, yes, it's VentinhoMassaro.tv. It has all my recordings of my retreats from the past, also recent ones. And it's get access coupon codes that you can apply to Crowdcast, which is the platform where we have the weekly live streams. So if you're interested in the Self-Realization School, it might morph and it might include more other levels as well going forward. I'm not sure. But especially if you're interested in the Self-Realization aspect, check out Season 1 and Season 2. They are currently in the library of VentinhoMassaro.tv. Also, if you go to the browse section, which is where you'll find all the items, there's also a segment underneath the Self-Realization School that says Sedona Meditations. I highly recommend that because they apply the teachings of the seasons in a meditative format, so you can just sit down, listen, and be taken deeper and deeper in this way.
Super, thank you.
And there's honestly enough content there to get you very, very far, if not all the way. Also, there's a retreat that I did after the Sedona experiment, the one Michael was referring to, or you were referring to.
Yes.
And it's called the Sedona Bliss Retreat, I believe, 2017.
Probably in May or something, yeah.
Yeah, so it's a 5-day retreat, and then there was a weekend event attached to it. Okay. So there's a 5-day recording and a 2-day additional recording.
And that's on there?
Correct.
Oh, very good. So you're even getting me curious now. And I very seldom, you know, listen to anybody else's teachings.
I know the feeling.
Yeah. Well, you know, when the teaching is happening within you, you don't have time for other people's teachings. So you just kind of...
It's true.
Yeah. Yeah, but I am happy that you've caught my attention a few times. Like I said, you pop up every now and then, beginning in, like I said, probably May or June of 2012. So that's why I contact you every now and then. I think for us, this is probably the fourth time we've been together. I think I invited you to Pueblo the first time. And then I interviewed... Oh, no, we went out to lunch once the first time. I came up to see you. We went to the tea house. Do you remember that?
Mm-hmm.
And then I invited you to Pueblo. And then there was another interview here. And then the Awakening Together Fall Retreat. And then this again. So I don't know, you know, if or when it will happen again. But I enjoy it when it happens. Haircut, is this new?
Yeah, it's a little short, but it's good.
It just happened
like a couple of days ago.
Yes, I thought. the first thing I noticed when you popped on was your haircut. I don't know, Ventinho, we have a total of 5 minutes left. Is there anything we haven't talked about that we should?
Well, I would like to hear how you're doing, but maybe that'd be on a different call or private call or whatever.
Yeah, maybe we can chat sometime. But briefly, I think in some ways we're on the same wavelength as you. We're not starting a school, but I had an emptying out experience. Mine occurred in a church that I was in all alone, and I, like you, had a vision, sort of. It wasn't visual, but it was a vision. And we are starting a retreat center where everyone can come to go to their next step with God, whatever their next step with God is. And again, the guidance was all about setting up the environment. I mean, that was the key point, was it had to be the right environment. So so in some ways, we're similar to you, but right now I don't have any ideas about school. In fact, it might even be the kind of place where we would invite you to come sometime for a retreat, so possibly inviting different teachers there and then also having self-guided retreats. And it won't be far from here, so I can go down a lot. So similar. We're going to be in probably in La Vida, Colorado, which is a really cool place. If you ever get the chance to go there, I'm pretty sure you'd love it.
Okay.
Yeah. It's down in southern Colorado.
Nice.
So, All right. Well, I don't think I have anything else. Let me just peek at them and see if... Oops, I just lost them. Okay, let's see. Everybody is showing appreciation, but there's a lot of people here, but I don't see any questions being asked. And again, my guess is that Michael is listening. So I guess, Michael, if there's anything you want to share with Bentinho after this, you could either email him directly if you know his email or send it to me and I'll forward it on. But, So thank you very much, Bentinho. It's been great. And, if you want to chat sometime, give me a text and we'll set up an appointment. It has to be an appointment, probably, for both of us.
Okay.
So I'll put you on my calendar and we'll chat. All right?
Cool.
Thank you.
This is lovely. Thank you.
All right. Bye.
Thanks for the audio, Michael.
Yeah.